PhD project, and we resubmitted the article to Journal of Clinical Nursing in February, and hope it will be accepted this spring. That means that the findings I present today is preliminary. We have four authors, all from Norwegian, nurses, scientists, and one in religion or psychology. And the aim of the study was to investigate how nurses and care workers understood and practiced spiritual care among residents with dementia in nursing homes. I will give you a short introduction and go to the rest of the slide. Dementia is a syndrome due to the disease of a brain that affects multiple high cortical functions. That includes memory thinking, language skills, orientation, comprehension, emotional control, learning capacity, and language judgments. And Alzheimer is the most common forms of the disease and contributes to 60 to 70% of the cases. As you can see, all the numbers, it's a growing problem worldwide. And in Norway, we have 70,000 people with dementia. We have to gain some knowledge regarding these patients. Spiritual needs in our problems, issues, what you call it, in the patients with dementia is characterized by continual losses, social isolation, losses of relationships, challenges in self-image, losing their narrative identity, and many of them struggle with loneliness. And holistic nursing practice, as we heard yesterday very well, is aimed to meet the patient's needs in different areas in life. And in dementia, we need a lot about psychological needs, and social needs, and physical needs. Like, they need help in nutrition, elimination, clothing, many of them struggles with depression and psychosis, delirium, apathy, aggression, and so on. And many of the patients also feel a lot of struggles with withdrawal. They need social relations, but still they draw back because they cannot communicate as they did, and they cannot continue the relationships as they did. But spiritual needs, we know less. And we don't know how nurses meet those needs. And how do they reflect on the needs? How do they practice spiritual care? Is it the same for cognitive healthy people as it is for cognitive reduced cognitive capacity? We don't know really. And so we need knowledge. And that was the basis or the ground that we...
I'm sorry. I haven't been here. This is seminar room, seminar one, right?
Yes.
One. I was sent back and forth three different times, so.
We started with this definition of spirituality by Reeve. She's a nurse, scientist. And she emphasized to make meaning through the sense of relatedness to dimensions that transcend. And it empowers and make connections to self, to others, and to God. That was our starting point. We also wanted to expand our understanding of the concept of transcendence. And we were inspired by Tatiana Schnell's study from 2011, where she emphasized individual differences in persons' lives regarding meaning-making. And she defines transcendence or self-transcendence two ways. Self-transcendence vertical as the relationship with the supernatural power like God, or the relationships horizontal with the relationships to self-knowledge, unison with nature, connection with others and the universe. And in her interpretation or understanding of meaning-making, she also mentions self-actualization, like freedom, creativity, power, order, holding on to values, well-being, and relatedness. So that was a basis. We also sought for the definitions of spiritual care, as you can see here. And a lot of them are aimed at people with which are cognitive healthy. And I don't think it's many definitions regarding people with dementia, if any, actually. But we were inspired by Reed, and we found those two as ground, and they are in line's definition of spirituality. And they emphasize the connecting and connecting to things and practices, and the intuitive, interpersonal, altruistic, and integrative expressions. So, to the study. We used focus groups as a starting point and conducted a qualitative exploratory study. A total of 8 focus group induced were conducted, and the number of participants ranged from 4 to 8 in each of the groups. The interview lasted 1.5 to 2 hours, and we asked questions like, what is spiritual care? How do you practice spiritual care? And you can see, as some mentioned earlier today, it's a lot of women who work in the nursing homes, 31 participants, and only 1 male. Mm-hmm. Here's the characteristics of the nursing homes.
Explosive with a red, rhodochrome crystal.
Okay. In Norway, nursing science shows that 81% of the residents have a diagnosis or have a dementia disease. Not everybody are diagnosed with it, but they have it. The total number of employees who are not ethnically Norwegians were 44. And the ethnicities included Hispanic, Polish, Dutch, Swedish, and African nurses or care workers in our study. We analyzed it by using Lindseth and Norberg's phenomenological hermeneutical method of researching lived experience. And it's sort of by reading, you make meaning units, condense them, sub-teams, and themes. And interpreting the whole. So to the results. We found 4 themes and 6 sub-themes, and I will give you a short summary from these findings from the study. The integration of spiritual care into general care, as they called work with hands, was characterized by that they thought touch as an aspect of spiritual care and described it as sitting at the patient's bedside, holding hands, giving a stroke the patient's cheeks, meeting their eyes, and just be with them. Physical touch can be a friendly smile while washing or rubbing the patients gently with ointment and creams. And one of the nurses said, it's like they say, here I am, here is my body, I am me. So, and I'm distracted from the outside. The manner which how the touch was performed mattered, and one nurse said, we must work with the hands, we must have warm hand and work with the hand, with the heart. Spiritual care unfolded in tacit knowledge, as they call work with the heart, was characterized by a desire not to harm, but to do the best for the patient. In the nurses' descriptions of what they meant by working with the heart, it emerged that intuition was a form of it, and made a greater sensitivity for the patient's needs. I didn't think that they actually performed spiritual care, but after a while, when we were talking and they were reflecting together in the groups, they said, we do it, we have it in us. We really do it, but we didn't have the concepts. We didn't knew it was like that.
Just 2 minutes then.
Oh. Spiritual care in terms of togetherness was to just be with the patients, just listen to them, just be there. And if the patients wanted a tranquil atmosphere, just sit still and not force them. They wanted the reciprocity in communication, and that was a good communication. The patients not always had words, but they communicated by their body language and their emotional experiences or expressions. And to provide content, that meant to make activities together with the patients. Eat a good chocolate, go outside in the garden, smelling flowers, these daily activities. In that they also saw that was spiritual care. And they met the religious needs by looking inside in the rooms. Did they have a Bible? Did they have crucifix or other symbols that represented their personal spiritual life? Then they helped the patients. And the patients didn't take the initiative. One nurse said, patients do not take the initiative themselves to meet their religious needs, but if it is given an invitation or a concrete clue, then they hang on and enjoy much of it. So the nurses had to be the part who took the initiative. And I can give you that at last. I asked if spiritual care was absent, what would happen then? And then the nurses said, apathy. I don't believe there is any kind of life left. You can't mobilize anything. You can't express yourself, use any senses or use yourself. Surely that is not a way to live. And I thought that was a strong expression of what it meant with the spiritual care. This is the conclusions, and it is a growing body of research in this field, but we need to more knowledge on how to meet spiritual needs in those with dementia. And I think that will contribute to give these persons dignity, wellness, and well-being throughout the disease. I can close up for that.
Great, thank you. Questions for Liv? We have 2 minutes for questions. Could you just tell us who you are?
I'm Annemieke Schrift-Akkerman, I'm the Netherlands, from the Netherlands. And I'm a researcher from the Nurses High School. And I'm wondering if there is a difference for nurses for dementia patients or for patients renal patients. Do you think there are differences when you are doing the same research with other nurses?
I'll do care workers and nurses, if it's differences between them. Yes, it is. But it wasn't our aim to sort of see if what or compare them in any way. They were conducted this data through a joint reflection. It was something they did together. And that wasn't a point for us to see if the nurses were more clever or more skilled than the care workers. So, and in Norwegian nursing homes, it's less nurses. Yes, it's just a few. So we had to implement also care workers in attendance.
It's a beautiful study. I'm Niels Christian Beek, the last speaker here today. Just a quick thing, how did you translate, or how did you use, which word did you use for spiritual care when you made the questionnaire? Did you say this already?
Yeah.
When I was not here?
Yes, okay. I did. We asked them, what is spiritual care?
For you.
How do you understand? It was very open, and then the conversation started, and it went on.
But I mean, what was the Norwegian word you used? Only answer?
Yeah.
Any other questions?
You mentioned the word intuition.
Yes.
I'm sure what's your understanding of
yes.
intuition,
it's not intuition or tacit knowledge, maybe you it's a more proper word in nursing theory. But I refer to how they understood it, tacit knowledge or intuition. We would maybe say that tacit knowledge is not tacit when you speak about it. Then it's open, you have already put words on it, so then it's not tacit anymore. But they were talking about we don't know really what to do all the time. Sometimes you just feel we have to do it before the patients react. So they was in front of the patient's reactions, and they knew the patients and felt something is going on, we have to do something, and then they used their intuition. That's why, how they explained it.
I think we must draw that to a close. We've got a busy session, so thank you, Liv.
Yes.
Now we move on to our second speaker, who is Dr. Anemic Shep Ackerman. I'm sorry, that's not good.
Oh, just almost.
Not bad. Almost. Close, but there you are.
Can you use the stick here if you want to the presenter? It should be working.
And the topic of this next presentation is religion, spirituality and spiritual care of nurses in mental health care, hospital care and home care in the Netherlands.
Yes. On the place of yes.
There's a title in it. I can go further. Religious and spiritual aspects of life are important, as we hear all days here. And spiritual care is important for patients, and spiritual care is important for important task for the nurses. We know spiritual care competency of nurse depends on a few variables. Age. The higher the age, the more competent nurses think they are. The more working experience, the more competent nurses think they are. And if spirituality is important in the nurse's life, also the competence is higher. But what about different sectors in healthcare? We do have three sectors in the Netherlands. I think it's all over the world. The hospital care, the mental health care and the home care. And do these nurses perceive spirituality and spiritual care differently, and how competent do they think they are in delivering spiritual care? And next to this, what factors appear to contribute to this? Our method, we made a questionnaire with four parts. First, of course, the demographics, age and gender, life view, life events, and educational background. Then a list of McSherry with perceptions of spirituality and spiritual care. In this part of the questionnaire, we are looking for the view of the nurses. Is it a generic view or is there a more specific view? The specific view means if nurses do think it's only religion or it's only existential questions or it's only the personal, and in a generic view it's all three. Then self-assessment of spiritual care competences. It's the list of René van Leeuwen. Here, nurses can say, do they think they are competent in delivering spiritual care? It's a self-assessment. And the last part is about evaluation of spirituality. Is spirituality important in their lives? All are 6 points, 5 or 6 point skills, but that we see later on. The answers from the different parts of the questionnaire and the summary scores will be compared between sectors and between demographics. And here are the respondents. 202 nurses in hospital care did completed the questionnaire, 160 in mental health care and 87 in home care. Demographics, of course, most nurses are female. The youngest are working in hospital care. In each sector, more than half of all nurses say they are Christian, and the other, there are also the nurses who say they are atheistic, agnostic, or do have no faith, and this different percentages. One third in each sector have a higher education, and the lowest education group we see in hospital care. More than half of all nurses do have life events experience, and we did add a question about their own spirituality on a 10-point scale. So just a question. how spiritual do you think you are? And they had to say between 0 and 10. And here we see the mean numbers. So a lower score for hospital care nurses and a higher score for home care nurses. And even a question to you. Do you think there are differences? Who think that the hospital care nurses do have the higher score on competencies and perceptions? Who think the mental health care is the highest? And the home care nurses do have the highest score?
Hospital highs. Okay,
we will see.
Okay. So it was a quiz, was it?
I don't have a prize, but the perceptions. First of all, we see there are little differences. Mm-hmm. On a 5-point scale, 3.5, 3.8, 3.8, the lowest for the hospital care. Mm-hmm. And this means that the hospital care nurse do have a little narrower view, but it's not significant difference. The competences, the same numbers. The hospital care nurses do think they are not that good in delivering critical care. However, the other nurses do have a somewhat higher score. Nice to see if there are subscales in the competence scale. And we see for all nurses, all sectors, the lowest is the professionalization and improving of quality of care, and the highest are the attitude and the communication about the spiritual, the patient's spirituality. But within each subscale, the lowest is the hospital care. So there are differences, but when we see the subscales, there are no difference in before. It could be that the attitude was high in mental health care and low in hospital care, but it isn't. Then the personal spirituality. Also the same, somewhat lower for the hospital care and somewhat higher for the home care. However, it's all around 4. And also here, these are subscales, the connectedness to oneself, to others, and to the transcendent. And again, the lowest for all sectors is the transcendent, and the higher the oneself and the other, which means that the transcendence is a little part of the life of the nurses than the oneself and the others. And for the home care, we see nurse and home care that this one is the highest. It's a 5-6-point scale, so rather high score. So others are important in the lives for nurses. And that's
gelukkig maar.
Then we have the measures and the correlations. And here you see all high correlations, which means that when the competences are scored high, and also the perceptions have a high score, and also the personal spirituality has a high score, and the numerical figure have a high score. So it's difficult to distinguish between the measurements. If someone say, I think I'm good in spirituality, it's important for me, then all parts of the question have a high score. Then there are the factors. Here we see the different life views. Now, what we see is that when you have a life view as Christian, Islamic, Hinduism, Buddhism, and humanistic, then you have a high score. It's not rather high, but the lowest we see for nurses who say they are atheistic, agnostic, or do have no faith. And what does this mean? Life view is important in spirituality. Yeah, that's what we all know, of course. Then the age. What I said in the background, age is important in spirituality, and also in this group of nurses we do see that the higher the age, the higher score. So the broader the view of spirituality, the more competent they think they are. The spirituality is more important in their lives, what we see in the last two points. And we didn't find any difference between educational background and experience life views, and the life view, experience life events, I mean, and the other one. There was a difference. That was the gender. So I put all the factors in a regression analysis. I thought, but which one is the most important? And then we see the same as we saw already. Hospital care have the lowest score. The higher the age, the higher the scores on competence and personal spirituality. And with a life view, as Christianity, humanity, Buddhism, and Hinduism, Islamities, then you have a higher score on all measurements. However, when we put the factor own spirituality on a 10-point scale, then all the other factors are dropping out, and that's the most important prediction for these measurements. Mm-hmm. And that's what Domi said already yesterday. Mm-hmm. The most important thing in spirituality is your personal spirituality. Now, back to the research question. How do nurses in different sectors in healthcare perceive spirituality and spiritual care, and how competent do they think they are? They have a rather generic view. They think they are rather competent. It's almost 4 on a 5-point scale. And spirituality display a role in their lives. And the factors that appear to contribute, it is the sector, the hospital care nurses who have a somewhat lower score. Age, the lower the age, the lower the scores. And life view is important, with most important the own spirituality. That brings me to a point of discussion, because the nurses in hospital care were also the youngest nurses. So it's a question for me, is it the nurses?
Is it the sector or is it the age?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I do know maybe the younger nurses are choosing hospital care because they think it's just hard work and not as much as thing, maybe. Or the older nurses choose the home care because of they like the more the relationship in this. Mm-hmm. So I hope you can say. And the other point is there seems to be associations between the perceptions and the competence in religiousness and age. And then about the education. If it depends on your life or your age and your own interest, why should we insert it in education? Mm-hmm. And that's that. I hope you can talk about.
Yes, great. Thank you. Any questions?
Yes. I was just wondering about the
concept. Could you tell us who you are, please?
I am Hans, yes, Stefan Hansen from Oslo.
Great, thank you.
Diakonian University College.
Good.
The concept of a nurse, because you are talking, and I was also thinking of the comparison with these things. And just under half of them were educated on a bachelor level, as far as I can
yes,
see.
Yes, oh, that's queen in the Netherlands. We do have.
We call it a nurse when there are something, some lower educations.
Yes, we do have a bachelor and master. That's the difference.
Okay.
And
so
secondary is bachelor and. Higher education is master.
I see. But whereas
it's not the age?
With the dementia yes. care in Norway, they would have less than 50% would be a bachelor or master, and the others would be on a lower level than
yes.
this.
Mm. Yes.
So that's
the lower level are not in this.
That's fine. That's good. So you are using the same nurse
yes.
concept.
Yeah.
But then, of course, I would wonder if the difference between the hospital. Persons could be linked to their education level. If they are more masters, they will be more rationalistic and secular
that's
or whatever.
Interesting. I do think we have to research it. Another group of nurses, or the aides, the nurse
yes.
aides, I think.
But the younger ones might tend to have a higher level of education?
Not always.
No, I see. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Any more questions? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
So our third speaker is Dr. Torgeir Sorensen from Oslo in Norway. And Torgeir is going to be talking to us about meaning making. Christ in Religion, the Significance for Patients in Treatment for Substance Use Disorder.
Yes.
So over to you, Torgeir.
Yeah, I'll give you the one. Yes, I have to make a little specific aim, because after the submission of the abstract, we found out that we wanted to include the patients in the sample. So because here it's talk about healthcare professionals, but we also include the patients. Yes. So meaning making spirituality and religion significance for patients in treatment for substance use disorder in Norway. As in Norway, lifetime prevalence of alcohol dependence and abuse is on 23%, and that's quite a high number, I believe. And as you all know, addiction has a large burden for the individual, represents a large burden for the individual, and impacts on several levels in society. If you read the Handbook of Religion and Health and so on, you will find that spiritual and religious factors protect against mental health, and you could define substance use disorder into that family. And some studies are presented, not very many, are presented in the handbook, showing that an increase of weekly religious attendance increased the probability of stopping drinking heavily compared to the less frequent attendance over a long period of time. It was a 20-year follow-up study or something. Overall, few clinical studies are done on meaning-making, spirituality and religious relation to treatment of substance use disorder, especially if you exclude the AA studies. In Norway, ideal organizations and trusts represent 60% of the substance use disorder treatment. And several of these institutions are founded on religious values. Like, for instance, the Blue Cross, but several others as well. And still, these institutions are funded by governmental or health authorities. And the funders demand that the therapy should be neutral with respect to religion. So, that was some including remarks, and my aim was, what is the significance of meaning and meaning-making and spirituality and religiousness in treatment of inpatients with substance use disorder at religiously funded institutions in Norway? Okay? And we, with respect to the funding of this study, it was the health authorities that funded the study, and they want, as it were, not many studies conducted, they wanted to fund us to see whether such factors that like religion and spirituality, and the fact that it was, the institution was based on religious values, whether it had some importance for the patients, importance for therapy. So we selected one institution within Innlandet Hospital Trust, as a health trust in Norway, in the Norwegian inland, in the eastern part of the country. And we conducted two focus group interviews with the therapists. That's all, about 8 people in each group, and that was all therapists available. And it was special trained nurses, social workers, psychologists, and every other profession you can imagine during regarding therapy. And also, when we had done the first analysis, we realized that we wanted to include this focus group on the inpatients to expand the material and see if we saw something more. So we had an interview guide, a lead of the discussion, with, and in the focus group, therapists discuss the function of meaning, meaning making, spirituality and religiousness in treatment, and their own contribution as therapists, and the significance of the institution being founded on religious values, and accommodation for spirituality and religion and meaning making themes in therapy and at the institution in general. And among patients, the patients discussed in the focus group where they found meaning in life and what's important in treatment in general, and the religious basis of the institution, and in which way spirituality, religiousness and meaning making can be significant in treatment, and as a special theme, the pastoral care at the institution. And we used qualitative content analysis utilizing systematic text condensation. It's a Norwegian MD that has developed this approach, but quite similar to Leaves, I believe. It's categorization and condensation and synthesizing. Yes. Okay, the findings. I think that we could divide the findings in two parts, looking at the therapists making kind of a framework for the therapy and the patients, and then we present the patient's experience around these questions. And we also have this quite wide approach towards how do you define, how do you look at what spirituality is and what spirituality and meaning is at your institution. A wide understanding came up, and it was an open focus on values linked to care and benevolence, respect for human dignity, unprejudiced and individual. This is very important, that they had an individual approach. And it was kind of a horizontal transcendence approach, because they had to balance between the institution's religious basis and the demands from the health authorities funding the institution. So that was one of the most difficult parts for them, to find the right balance. Because I think they themselves wanted to be more vertical, but they couldn't. And they had this fundamental attitude of openness towards the patients and their relation to their physical, mental, social, as well as their spiritual dimension. And one of the workers there emphasized that she was wanted to work at just this institution because of their approach to the spiritual dimension, and they included the spiritual dimension in the three other dimensions. And one said, the patients arrive here with shame, guilt, feeling of guilt and regret, and here they are met with faith, hope and forgiveness. So, tell me when it's 5 minutes left.
It's about now.
Okay. So they also have these artifacts, pictures, religious pictures. They have their own chapel. There are rituals there. Morning prayer and service, but they are not forced to go to these things. And there is a chaplain on this institution, even though it's only some 26 patients or so on. Something, but this person has a very special role as a kind of holy person. So pastoral care is very important. It's viewed, I think, by the therapists as a part of therapy, but as you will see, among patients, he is not the therapist. He is outside the therapy, but contributes to therapy. So, among patients' experience to be met and seen. And personal human qualities like care and love among the therapists and other workers were important. That was the first they emphasized. And as one said, in my case, it was like going from hell to heaven to come to this institution. And the patients search for meaning by working with guilt and shame. These patients talk about that, of course, the meaning of his stay at this institution is to get clean, and still one of the most important other things is to rebuild the bridges that has been broken through his substance use or misuse. And in contrast to other treatment programs like the AA, for instance, the treatment at the institution is individual, and that is very important for the patient, that it is individual. And they find it positive to have choices regarding what works, which tools to use. They can take their own choices of what they are going to participate in and what not to participate in. You could say about this institution that it is rehabilitation for advanced patients, they said. In a way, you have to take the case in your own hands. At the same time, you have good helpers around. And patients use several tools in treatment. They go to the psychologist and other therapists. They work out, they take a walk in nature and everything. But they also have this special tool linked to the chaplain. As I said, he is outside the treatment but contributes to treatment. And he is a carrier of human compassion and something bigger. You could call it spirituality. And one of the patients said that he is a carrier of a symbol. He is a symbol. And this is special because this in the homogenic folk church environment, a very typical folk church environment.
Please finish soon.
Finish soon, okay.
Please.
The morning prayer serves as an important place for processing different themes in life, helping the patients to live better lives. So they go to, we need some place and tranquility, right? It has been so much negativity, action and impulses and anxiety and things like that, that to get some peace of mind is cool. Compared to go to the morning prayer and service and everything. But I think the most important thing regarding chaplaincy is the possibility to go to confession. And they are told about the possibility to go to confession. And both people, Christian people, but also agnostic people, use confession. And in fact, this informant is an agnostic. And she says, chaplain is the one and only person I want to talk to about things I need to make up with due to his professional secrecy. Mm. I think this is the main finding, or the most distinct finding. Okay. Stop there.
Yes, great. Thank you.
I'm sorry. I thought it was 20.
Well, we had such a strict deadline.
Yes, but just carry on.
Okay,
yes.
Thank you. So, questions, please.
I think it's very, very interesting.
Please introduce yourself.
Yes, I'm Niels Christian Beek from Germany, Denmark, Germany. From an ecumenical point of view, from a theological point of view, there are so many interesting things here. As you yourself said before, just the former slide, you said it was, what denomination were these?
80% the Church of Norway, I would believe.
Okay, but kind of low church, I suppose, in some,
yes,
some ways. And then you have notions, theological notions, that go much more with the high church or Catholic tradition, the sacramentality of the pastor or priest in the Catholic tradition, that's a sacrament. It is not in our Lutheran traditions. So that the chaplain would be a symbol. That sounds very orthodox Catholic to me. And also the whole role of confession as a way of meeting God in almost sacramental ways. It's very interesting that you have this with the Church of Norway. I think, at least in Denmark, that's not very much practiced. But is it in general in Norway, or is it only in this situation?
I think it is in this special situation, and I think also it is linked to the very person. not every priest should invite to that. He is a person that utstråler. Comfort. And he is a very nice person. Everybody likes him. He is very lovely. And that is also, I think it's an important finding due to the qualities of a chaplain.
Personal quality.
Yes. Yes?
I'm Brendan from England. Just a theological point again. It's interesting that you said that an important point that was very therapeutic for the patient as an antidote to, you know, anger and hatred, the problems they're carrying, was faith, hope and forgiveness. And it's interesting that they had a cardinal theological virtues, faith, hope and love, in traditional Judeo-Christian tradition. So you said they were key, and it's also important, this is an important point, I think, that's a vertical dimension towards spiritual and theological thought, rather than you see a lot of the talks that have gone now, it's very much a horizontal dimension to emphasise, where this clearly emphasises the therapeutic benefit of a vertical dimension.
So that, I think their wish is vertical.
Yeah.
But their practice is horizontal, but they want to make it possible for the patients to go vertical if they want themselves. Okay?
Well, that's the patients exhibit a strong draw towards that vertical dimension, theological virtues. Yeah,
I think so.
Okay, I think we must draw it to a close. We've got two more speakers. So, Torgia, thank you very much. Well, our next speaker is from Thailand. Dr. Priya Kiwakimon?
Yes, Kiwakimon.
Not bad.
Yes, not bad. 50%.
Yes. Priya, welcome. You've come a long way to speak to us.
Yeah. Come to share in experience.
Good.
Different culture.
We're so happy to have you here. So
Thank you. So, the development of the instrument for measuring spiritual health scale in Thai university students.
Yes. My background is a nurse lecturer in Thailand, and most of my work I deal with the OBGYN. But another position I had to deal with is as a lecturer, we had to be assigned to be the committee to develop the university students. And from my experience in Thailand, regarding to the spirituality in hospital, I think it's already quite good. We have service. And most of Thai people, they are Buddhist, so we have this kind of personality to take care, and we support every religious to do some ritual in the hospital. And another thing I have to go further is the university student, because in the recent year, this is where I'm from, we have 5 campus. The research is sponsored by the Thai National Research Institute. They would like me to try out something, and if it's useful, I can use with the university in Thailand and the research development of my university. The review literature found that there is the imbalance of Thai university students. They are more materialism and social media addiction, and terrorist, sex, alcohol use, smoking and gambling inside university. And sometimes we have the case that especially in the season of the World Cup, something like that, from European, it affects to Thailand too. And some of the research found that they have low self-confidence. So this kind of thing, I think, is come from the mind of the people. That is the most important in Buddhism. And another imbalance in their life. And I also have my lesson learned before I submit this project to the government, that from my mini project, I use some technique, Buddhism reflection, Reiki, and some activity using the experiential learning theory to implement with my student. I found something changed in the group of my students. For example, some students who are pay attention more on the money, they want to work together with study, and sometimes it affects to their study. And after we run some project, we found that they change something, and they make them their life more balanced and happier in study, and they can do the work besides study happily, something like this. And another work, I work with the student, nurse student, who have some bias to the unwanted pregnancy. And they feel bad and they want to take care and unhappy with the situation. So from this pilot project, I found that we still need something that to improve our students, not only nurse or medical student, but also the university student. If we have some idea or some project can be used together in our university. The objective of this study, the first year, the national grant ask me to develop the scale. We need scale in Thailand. We have some scale for the patient already, but we don't have the scale for the healthy people like the adolescent or for the university student. And next, the second object to develop the program, this result of presentation, this presentation will be the first phase study, that is scale development. Buddhism pay attention on the mind. Quality of the mind is the most important. And in review literature, we found that to practice Buddhism, we would like person to have the self-transformation to the state of the Buddha nature. We call the state of peace, self-awakened, and self-expand, and compassion, and be more wisdom. And if we practice Buddhism, you should have self-understanding, self-contentment, and self-direction. To be sure that you don't practice religion for something like a by faith, just follow something, some regulation, but you yourself have to have some mindful in yourself too. In this study, I use the definition of spiritual health follow Thai Health Act of 2007 that is come from Buddhist philosophy. The spiritual health in this study means the state of human being which is perfect in comprehensive knowledge and conscience leading to kindness and sympathy. I use the 8 steps of the release 2012 as a guide to develop the instrument. And first step, I have a literature review from the Buddhist school. There are 3 main Buddhist school in that present. The first one is Hinayana, Mahayana, and Tantrayana. Actually, in Thailand, the Hinayana is the most influenced, but recently the Mahayana and Tantrayana also influenced in Thailand. Tantrayana is the school that come from Tibetan Buddhism. Many scholars use this technique to educate people. So I review, and these 3 school is the main thing that I use to develop. And when I review these 3 school, I found that the most important practice of Buddhism, we have to follow the Eightfold Path. This include morality, meditation, and practice. And Mahayana school is mentioned about the practice of method and transcendent virtue. We call it paramita. Paramita. And in the Tantrayana or Tibetan Buddhism, they focus on the Mayoli school. I generate the item. There are, at the beginning, I have 115 items, and this item try to develop it based on the context of university student. And the instrument designed into 5-point Likert scale from strongly agree to non-agree at all about it. If they have that type of the spiritual health, I have the 6 experts to see the content validity to Buddhist scholar two Buddhist researchers and two lecturers who experienced student activity. We used the CVI 1 and final tentative instrument is 105. There are 10 items deleted from the meaning is very close to each other. After that, I am administrating the item to the university student. There are 15 faculty. This include the healthcare student and the humanities student. And from the item 103, I use the ratio of one item for 5 samples. So come up with about 530 students in this study. And exploratory factor analysis was tested, and to test the exemption, it fit that the KMO is 0.9 and the balance state is significant. From the factor analysis, I have
25 minutes.
Okay, from factor analysis, I come up with the 4 dimensions of the spiritual health scale for Thai University students. The first one is noble mind, the second one moral living, the third one mindful management, and the fourth one attentive learning. The sample of the noble mind, for example, I am proud to study in this university and I am willing to help others when I have a chance. I see the importance of nonviolent living. This is the sample of the item. Second domain, moral living. I always intervene the alternative and health technique for inner peace. I concern about university student environment that might bring harm to others. The third domain, mindful management. I am capable of control myself over my anger. I will let my feeling or emotion affect my decision making. The fourth one, attentive learning. I commit to the goal of my study. I learn happily and I have a clear goal for my study. And after I have the 4 domains, I test it. It had a good reliability, 0.86, and each domain had the reliability, the alpha, Cronbach alpha, more than 0.7. And I test the concurrent validity. It had a good correlationship, medium correlationship with the Thai happiness indicator 0.574. And that's all. I have my scale. And after I have a workshop with Professor Koenig, he suggested me that the instrument, the reliability and validity is quite good, but after try it sometime, make it shorter, you'll be better because it's cover 30 items. It's quite long. And the 3 dimension is very useful to develop the program in the next phase of my study. Thank you.
Thank you. So, questions for Prahi?
Just want to mention that it is impressive to develop such an instrument, and that it is very much needed in the eastern part, as mostly all such instruments are developed in the United States. And it's very important to consider the context. And also, as the Buddhist religion is so different from Judaism and Christianity and Islam, it's even more important. So congratulations.
Thank you. Hopefully next conference I will come for the resolve again. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you. So we come to our last presentation.
Yes.
And we're going to be on time, aren't we?
Yeah, I will even take less than I need.
Okay, is that because I've been hammered away at to be prompt?
Yeah.
So let me introduce our final speaker this afternoon. And this is Professor Dr. Niels Christian Hibbitt.
Bitt.
Okay. From Germany.
Denmark. And Germany, yes. Mostly Denmark, I think.
Okay.
I'm very happy to be with so many Norwegians and Swedes.
Okay. So what happens when the patient's bell rings an explorative study in the field of palliative care. So we hope you're going to tell us what happened.
Yeah, we'll give you some ideas.
Good.
First we have to open the dear study and see how it looks. Yeah.
Good.
Okay. First, some limitations. I mean, in quantitative studies you always have limitations, but here's a personal limitation. I did not invent the study, and in fact, two of our doctoral students, Jakob Müller and Cecilia Lutz, should have been here and presented themselves. I'm the godfather together with Eckhard Fricke. We are two professors in spiritual care. So I was asked to present their study, which is, I find, a very fascinating study. But you would have probably had much more inside feeling with the study than you will get with me, but I hope you'll get some insight in what happened in the study. So, the overall idea was quite radical. It was to set off a whole week in a palliative care unit. We'll be very precise, Sonia.
We're on time.
How happy I am to be here.
We get almost afraid you will come and tell us you have to finish this.
No, we are on time. We're on time.
Yes, all right.
He's just begun, John.
Yes, keep going. I'm going around just to make sure that
we thought so. Let's win a prize. We will finish before time.
Good.
All right.
See you. Well done.
See you very much. The idea was very radical, to have a whole team of researchers in a palliative care unit and be there all the time and observe 24 hours in 7 days. Mm-hmm. And the idea was extremely simple. We were going to be there, have enough staff to cover what we wanted to look at. And the only idea, the basic idea was what happens if someone of the patients of the dying ring the bell? So when someone rang the bell, we would observe how long time does it take until someone comes, and what are the questions that they ring for, why do they call on people, on the staff, and what do they talk with the professionals about. So we did both, do quantitative data collection in terms of time, in terms of quantifying the content of what was being talked about, and we had qualitative work as well, both with the patients, how did they experience the conversation, and how did the health professional feel that what happened, why did they call, and how does all this work. So that was the basic idea, a very, very simple idea, and quite a simple methodology, I think, as well. All right, the background for the study. We did look if some similar things have been published, and we found that it's the first study on nurse calls in Germany. It's the first study on nurse calls in the context of palliative care worldwide. So that also triggered our interest. And it's one of the few studies that observe patient care interactions in the context of nurse calls. So it is really what we consider ourselves an exploratory field study. Concerns, we wanted to look at which concerns do patients express when they call for a nurse. Very, very simple. Very broad. We're very open to see whatever was there. Second, sensitive interaction. Which interaction patterns can be found between caregivers and patients? Do they have time? Are they present? Is it going well? And so on. And third, we looked at distress, and here it became very quantitative. What is the level of distress felt by patients when setting off a nurse call? So these are the three main aims. Let's look straight at the results so we keep the time and a little bit less. The period observation was from the 10th of November 2013 to the 17th of November 2013. So that's 7 days for 24 hours, Sunday to Sunday. We observed 23 caregivers, not caregivers. I did manage to correct one, as you see, but the other one went down. Okay. 22 female and one male nurse. Patients were 20 in the palliative care unit, and the registered nurse calls that we registered in the observed station were 362, so quite a large number. And the observed interactions were 122. Sometimes we only were able to quantify what happened, and but we did quite a lot of observed interactions, as you can see, 122. So we have quite a massive data, both quantitative and qualitative. First of all, I wanted to know that this study was conducted in a Catholic hospital of the Barmherzige Brüder, the Merciful Brothers, and we could compare it with one. The only comparative study we know is a study from the U.S. where they also had recorded response time, and response time in this study after the call was that there was a response. Someone came after 240. Seconds, whereas in this study, in our study, it was only 32 seconds. So we must say they had really organized the unit to be very efficient and very effective from this point of view in terms of time, because one thing we know, if they call in a distressed situation, it's important to arrive as quick as you can. So all of this is quite good. These are just some very basics. Now, let's look at the concerns for which patients rang the bell. Somewhat to our surprise, somewhat expected, it was mostly about practical and physical concerns. There were some emotional concerns, very few spiritual concerns, and some other concerns. And the interesting thing we found that the only times emotional concerns and spiritual concerns were voiced was when the caregiver found somehow inflated into or folded into the practical concerns and the physical concerns some little hints that there were some other things going on, actually. Maybe they rang the bell for some physical concern, but it was really because they were not feeling well or they were afraid or something. And so one of the main findings of the study is that it's really important not just to come and try to fix the practical concern. If there was a fan that gave too much noise for the patient to sleep, you know, okay, we turn it up, bye-bye. That's not what they're in for sometimes. And I'll give you an example at the end for them in the study, in the qualitative part. So we won't go through what are all the practical concerns, the physical concerns. It has to do with pain, with problems of breathing, of course, not being able to sleep, all these things, you know. Emotional concerns could be worries or fears, things to do with wishes for dying. We had some instances of fears of dying. The spiritual were quite broad, but they were only 3%. So this is not a lot about spiritual care, if that's what you had expected. In fact, we were also somewhat surprised that in a Catholic palliative unit, there was so little happening in terms of spiritual care and spiritual concerns. Surprisingly, patients almost never expressed emotional concerns directly, as I already said. Although caregivers as well as observers often sensed latent concerns, both the caregivers and us as observers. For instance, did you have the feeling that there was another concern that was not verbally expressed by the patient when they called for something physical or practical? So the caregivers, 38% of the caregivers felt that there was more going on than the mere call for some physical or practical need. And amongst us as observers, almost half of us felt that when the call was for something practical, it was all about something else. And I think this is very important for palliative care. It's a difficult trade. It's really difficult to take care, because patients don't want to disturb, or they feel embarrassed, or they don't know how to bring out what's really, or maybe they cannot even verbalize what's going on with them. Caregivers as well as observers named the same three prevalent latent concerns. First of all, fear. A patient is fearful, worries, scared of the dark, etc. Second, need of contact, human touch, as we always spoke so much about in this conference. For instance, the patient wants to talk to somebody, is looking for contact, feelings of prudency or shame. Patient feels uncomfortable, for example, too, as for intimate care. And sometimes, more rarely, feelings of anger, sadness, or discomfort. I think this is a great case study and example. A patient, a female, called a nurse during night. She told the nurse that she was not able to sleep due to a loud peeping noise deriving from a medical equipment. The patient asked to turn it off. The caregiver explained to her that this wasn't possible. The patient was laying in the station for quite some time already. So it must have been a noise that she was used to, but now it was a problem. Subsequently, the patient asked if the caregiver could turn on the light in the back of the room. While the caregiver turned on the light, the patient explained that she was used to it and that she couldn't sleep without a little light. Then the caregiver arranged the patient's covers. While doing so, the patient told the caregiver that she wondered if there was anybody left in the station, since she had not heard any noises on the floor anymore. The patient added that she wondered if she was alone. So for us, and this became clear in the continuing conversation, this was all about feeling alone, feeling afraid, feeling abandoned on a very deep level. And maybe she wasn't even aware of it herself, but this continued in a great way, in a good conversation. But only because the caregivers took it up. Is this more, do you feel alone? Do you want to talk with someone? Can I stay a bit with you? And so things developed that. This just shows you the frequency of nurse calls. Thanks to God, it was during the day that most of the calls took place, but as you see, there was quite a dispersion all over the full 24 hours. Here you have other concerns, spiritual concerns, the smallest, emotional concerns, practical concerns, and physical concerns. So quite a wide distribution, but we see the same pattern. Which interaction patterns can be found between caregivers and patients? Now, this is a bit complicated. I'll try to take you through it. We discern between three areas. This area had to do with questioning, where the caregivers were both effective and questioning were proactive, so to speak. When they had a call for practical reasons, they were proactive in trying to find what was anything else going on. Then there was what we had with more yellow, where caregivers are either a bit stressed for time, or they feel pushed by the problem that is raised by the patient, so they get more distant, they become more instructive and more counseling, instead of being close and being effective and questioning. That's what we found to open up most of the conversations they had. Okay? And down here you have more negative stuff. You have just informal things going on, rejecting and imperative, but that was quite rare. And I believe we have a slide. We don't want to compare here. Yeah. Most, thanks be to God, most of the conversations were full of questioning, 89%, effective counseling going on. There was some instructive, some counseling, some informal, and thanks again to God, very little imperative, and what we call zurückweisend, showing a way, or what you call it in English, rejecting the patient. We found this to be extremely rare that that happened. Last thing about distress. What is the level of distress felt by patients when setting off a nurse call? Here we had a distress rating on an 11-point Likert scale. And patients' ratings tendency to extreme value, either very high ratings in 34% of the cases, or very low ratings, 51. It was very rarely that they were in the middle. They were either really afraid or anxious, or they were kind of okay. Here you have again the situation when we had the highly distressing concerns. And of course, this is interesting. This is the patients that were really in a high level of distress. And here the situation was somewhat different. You have the physical concerns, the emotional concerns, but next to it comes spiritual concerns. So obviously, the link of distress and spirituality, as we see, comes clearly through in these data. And finally, we had some latent concerns and some practical concerns. So, as it is expectable, but here in the data also very clear, spirituality and spiritual needs are mostly and most often linked up with existential needs, with needs of fear, of anxiety, of distress. This is the experience of many caregivers, but I'm happy that it's also shown in this data set. What we find also in the qualitative data that I can't show so much of today, but that Again, the relationship is everything. In our Danish studies we find the same thing. Even searching for spirituality, spirituality is lived out in relationships. It's not something floating on a cloud, but it is in relations to family, to the community, of course to chaplains, but even to God. The thing that happens in a faith situation in prayer has to all to do with relationship. So we have been doing a lot of work with attachment theory and find it to be very productive and positive to look at attachment dimensions in palliative care. So attachment between the patient and the caregiver, but also in terms of spirituality, conceiving spirituality in terms of attachment. Although emotional concerns are rarely expressed directly, latent emotional concerns can be fear, need for contact, feeling of prudence. We found that an effective style of communication is highly relevant in patient-caregivers' interaction. So having time and being able to show emotion, to be effective and not to be only professional. I think in most therapies it's becoming more and more clear that what is at work in a therapeutic or caregiving situation is the relationship, and it's the affection, it's the emotion that comes through. And that can be a really big challenge for today's busy healthcare situations that we have all over the world. Interactions following a nurse call are not only provider-centered and impersonal, but rather patient-centered and interpersonal. Patients tend to feel the stress and extreme values we found, more than we had expected, and that's where spirituality became important. All right, I will finish there.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
We have time for one or two questions. Any questions?
My name is Lars Donwolf from also School of Theology. I think this is a very nice study, and it's original. It's something new.
Yeah.
I think you got a new kind of data.
Mm.
Do you have any thoughts about how you, as researchers, were affected? What was
right.
going on in this department?
Yeah.
Did they run faster when you were there?
That's a good question. Of course, everybody knew we were there,
mm-hmm.
so they may have, you know, tried to work harder. To be more effective, you know, to be better caregivers. We can't rule out, and we will of course write in the publications that that could have been a factor. But you know, it would only be a percentage. I don't think it would flip the pancake completely. the fact that we were there, they were doing a great job, and they really did their best, and I think they tried to do so. And even if we were not there, that's my impression.
But in what ways were you a part of the?
We were just two persons normally there, and sometimes we were allowed to go into the room and observe, and other times we merely talked with either the patients or the caregivers after the conversation, what happened, what was it about, and that's where we have the data from. Mm. But the patients and the caregivers were very forthcoming. We did never have the sense that we were intruding or that we were blocking some kind of care provided. And I think that's a lovely and moving thing that people in palliative care research all experience. I mean, how can we disturb these poor dying people? You know, they must be so focused on their situation. But I find that there are a few other settings where patients or informants are more motivated to take part in such trials, because it gives meaning to them to, in this last dimension of their life, that some of the experiences they make can be fruitful for others. And from an ethical point of view, it's been discussed, how can we disturb dying people? Seems to me that it's almost like they, I wouldn't say, well, yes, that they, it's in a way almost something they appreciate in terms of meaning.
Can I just make a methodological
Please.
Point, if I could?
Yeah.
From studies in anthropology, it has been shown over time, and appreciating that this is quite a short time, that where there are researchers as observers, whether they're observers or participant observers, that in the end, the people in the study, whatever the context, they seem to forget that the observers are there. So over time, there is actually reducing effect on the behaviour of those who are being observed.
Yeah.
Just thought I'd make that point.
I'm sure there's a lot of research documenting that.
Yeah. Okay.
Just to eliminate another bias. What kind of hospital was this? Was it a hospital for every citizen in the area?
There may be a tendency that more patients might have an interest in spirituality because they knew it was a religious place, but we didn't really find that. And you can see in the data that spirituality is so low.
But I think it was more in the way of whether it was a privatized hospital or it was for the Gemeinde.
Yes, it was, but there was an access for the Gemeinde as well.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's often the situation in Germany. Mm-hmm.
Could you tell us who you are?
I'm Ellen Sabiel, Fernandez. I'm considering the parents of these patients in use. Do you get any feedback as to how their patients were feeling?
How the caregivers were feeling?
Yeah, it's carers. The patients' carers. The families and relatives.
Ah, yes. We don't have data for the relatives, if that's what you're asking for. No. That would have been a nice thing to have. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're considering a follow-up study because this opens so many aspects. Mm-hmm. And in fact, maybe even trying to see what happens if we have two kinds of interventions. There's what we've seen here, or more proactive questioning dimension where caregivers actually allow themselves time to ask if everything is okay, perhaps a bit more proactively, instead of just fixing the pillow or whatever it may be.
One last question.
I'm Anna Tan from Freiburg.
Yes.
And I find it interesting to see when you were talking to the patients afterwards, what was the conversation about it. Again, kind of being in contact with the patients and even talking maybe on a meta level about
it. Yeah.
It's interesting to think about that.
It worked well from that perspective. Yeah.
So we should close.
Thank you for your attention.
And thank you to all our speakers.